The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. I'm Tony Lightfoot, and thanking you for your support once again. And we're right at the very end of the season. It's been a season to remember for a lot of our folks, and right there in the thick of it is Freddie Winter. Greetings to you, sir.
Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Doing pretty good, doing pretty good. I'm talking to you while I'm sitting on the dock here on Lake 2 at Bennett's whilst you're somewhere else, so somewhere in Central Florida, I fancy.
Yeah, I'm in Palm Bay. I should say I'm recovering from wisdom teeth surgery, so this will be the longest conversation I've had in about 4 days. So, I've had a couple of rough days, but hopefully getting a bit better here.
Welcome back to the real world of sparkling conversation, I would say.
Thank you very much. And who better to do it with than you, Tony?
Yeah, things are going pretty well at the moment. You know, here in South Louisiana, you know, as I'm talking to you right now, the sun is shining, not a cloud in the sky, a little bit of mist on the water, but you'd expect that around about this time of year. When we're not hosting the collegiate nationals, we still have to contend with heat disappearing very, very rapidly here, but that's enough about me and about what's going on where I am right now. Let's talk about you, because it was kind of one of those seasons for you where you're recovering from that huge crash that you took at Monaco, the Grand Prix last season, and all eyes were like upon you to see if you still had the magic, if you still had the skill and everything, and had it all together, not only physically but psychologically as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you try not to be focused on what other people are thinking and all that, but I definitely sort of felt I had to prove to myself that I was capable. But I guess my mindset at the start of the year was I really had to take my ego out of it, because I've turned up at, you know, most every tournament for the last 10 years feeling competitive, you know, not necessarily think I would win, but I thinking I'd always be odds on for a podium. And so this year was different. I really had to kind of take my expectations down so I didn't get too upset and disappointed if it didn't go that way. And that was definitely the case at the start of the year. But I think as the season's gone on, I've been there or thereabouts every single tournament, maybe with the exception of Worlds. And I having let the dust settle, it's now been 2 weeks since the end of the season, and I think actually I can say this is my second best season ever. Mm-hmm. Which is very, very gratifying. I mean, I was on the podium a bunch. I was never in a pro tournament. I was never below fourth. Worlds, I came seventh, tied or whatever, which was a bit of a shame, to put it mildly, but. I'm very, very, very happy with the way it's gone, actually, now that I can kind of take a step back and look at it from the outside a little bit more.
Yeah, that Worlds was a tough draw. I mean, literally. I mean, come on. I mean, you're in amongst about eight or nine skiers that were tied with three at 41 off, and the balance of the other skiers that made it through the final all got four. You know, so I mean, you were first off the dock. You know, and that's probably. You probably haven't been first off the dock in those kind of scenarios in quite a while, huh?
Well, I'm not sure I agree. I mean, there's no excuse. I can't point to that. I was actually kind of excited to be first off the dock. I mean, I look at Moomba in 2023. I think it was 2023 or 2022. I forget, but 2023, I'm pretty sure it was. And I made it, through to the final in last spot, and I went out first, and I was only beaten by the last skier. So I put a lot of pressure on. I ran 2:01.5 at 41 in that tournament, and no one else beat that until Nate ran at 2 last skier off the dock. So I mean, I kind of felt good about going out of that spot. I mean, I didn't really, no excuses in terms of where I went out, but yeah, I just didn't ski well. You know, I had a busted, ran through 10:05, I would say perfectly, as good as anyone that day. and just got a bad one at 10.25. I was struggling with my gates a little bit around that time, but and then that was kind of it. You can't really get a bad one at 10.25 and then get all the way down it, which I would have needed to do. So yeah, it was a bit, I mean, very disappointing. At the time, honestly, it really felt like I'd failed in my mission because, you know, having broken my leg, you know, we can talk about the big tournaments and you can point at, I don't know, the Masters or Moomba and all that, but really, the, you know, the world is head, shoulders, chest, you know, and waist really above anything else. And mm-hmm. So I was pretty bummed out, to say the least. I mean, I really had to sort of pull myself together the next day and go, okay, like there is, you know, life is worth continuing with because there are other things to happen. I mean, it's been such a big focus for since I'd broken my leg on, you know, 26th of June the year before. But again, like, you know, here we are 2 months after that. And I can, you know, I was really happy to finish the season at Travers well. And, you know, that made me feel good. And I think that, you know, not having everything my own way this year will only make me hungrier. And I'll do better next year as a result.
Okay, we'll circle back over to Travers Grand Prix. I mean, because you basically had a really good end of season, you know, when you won the Pro Tour title for the very first time after a number of seasons of trying. But I mean, we'll go back and forth a little bit between how you're recovering from your leg and what have you, know. But I mean, Was there ever a point during the season? I'm sure there was. You know that it went from managing expectations to saying, okay, I can put all of this hoodoo in the back of my mind and not think about it so much and just go out there and ski.
Yeah, I mean it was actually. I'll tell you exactly when it was. It was when I won the first round at Masters. Like I. You know, went to Swiss again, not really knowing what to do. I was ski bad in the first, like not what to expect. To ski bad in the first round, got a, you know, good second round, made the final, and then made the podium, which I was like, okay, that was actually kind of a slightly maybe ahead of where I thought I was because I'd really not been that good in practice up until very shortly before that, and really, you know, still not at the level that I wanted to be at. And I went to the Masters and I ran two at 10.25 in the first round, and I was the only guy to run 10.75. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, I remember Freddie Krueger was there and I said to him, you know, he's a good guy. I was really enjoy his perspective. And I said to him, you know, that's a big score. And that's kind of, you know, even if I don't do well tomorrow, this is on the Saturday of the Masters, then that's a sort of, I've proven to myself that I can be really, really competitive. And he goes to me, just go win it tomorrow then. And that was the moment where I really felt like I could really be at the top again. And the win the next day did come ahead of schedule, I would say. Like, again, I didn't feel that competitive. I didn't feel like, you know, I've gone to Masters in better shape and not done as well. But that was my best in terms of the two rounds. I ran the most boys over 2 days. So that was my best ever Masters. So I was very, very happy with that. And then, you know, from then on, I kind of was like, yeah, you know what? I'm a winner, you know, I can be a winner again, which I hadn't really thought that. And that's a blessing and a curse. You know, it's good to have the confidence, but then you put more pressure on yourself and your expectation goes up and then you know, maybe frustration kicks in. You're not happy with coming third or whatever anymore. You want to be at the top. Now, of course, the harder you are on yourself, the more you raise your standards, the harder you work and all that sort of thing. So, you know, you know, good at water skiing, it's such a mental part of it. I mean, like I always say, I remember when I first started skiing all those years ago and I was kind of happy to get a podium, like there was actually a lot more enjoyment in that because I could nick a podium and there was a lot more chance of getting a podium than a win. So I'd kind of be happy a lot more of the time. And now it's like, no, I'm only happy if I win then. So you're kind of more frustrated all the time. So it's kind of, you know, but then you have to lead into that and allow that to happen if you want to be a winner. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really difficult to get that balance right because again, start of the year, like you say, like I was low expectations, so I was happy with lower results.
All right then, so okay, let's try and delve a little bit deeper into kind of the mental aspects of skiing, you know, because I mean now you got to a certain point where you can just switch off from what you're feeling or physically up to that point and then just like focus totally, you know, starting on the starting knock, you know, line goes tight, deep breath, pull out, entrance gates, all that kind of stuff. I mean, what I mean, what typically goes through your mind at that point, you know? Because I mean, you don't like physically like think about, you know, just back arm pressure, that kind of stuff, you know, then lean in, then make the turn, you know, much of that at that speed with that line length is pretty automatic, you know. So kind of take us a little bit through that. I mean, for the benefit of our folks that you know that are relatively new to the sport, or even those that are still trying to achieve somewhat towards higher echelon.
Well, I mean, the first thing I'll say is that I'm definitely, you know, I haven't got it figured out. You're always learning. And I mean, there's times where you go out there and you just feel so dialed and you're just like, right, this is going to happen. And it is sort of an autopilot, but that's, you know, that's a certain, you know, a perfect level of adrenaline, you know, but where you don't, you know, but not too hyped up, and you just kind of get like what they call the flow state. And you'll see videos of that, of people just when they're just completely in it and it's all just happening for them. For me, like, you know, I get very, very nervous, but my sort of, my routine is, you know, try and get nervous early, pull the heart rate down. I'll always kind of, you know, dip my head in when I get in the water and go, kind of have a breath and just go, okay, here we go. But then actually, counter to what you're saying, Tony, I do actually like to think about my keys, because if you're thinking about your keys, it's productive in two ways. One, you're actually going to do the things that you've got to do and not just kind of go into sort of autopilot and potentially get it wrong and do the wrong things because you know you've got nerves going on, but two, it stops you thinking about, you know, extraneous things you don't want to be thinking about. You know, if you're kind of thinking, okay, let's, you know, get the hip through, shoulder down, you know, move my feet slowly, whatever, then that's going to stop you thinking, oh my god, this is the Masters, this is the World Championships, what if I don't do well. So, you know, thinking about, I always try and think about the stuff that I'm working on and you know, same as I do in practice. So you want to be, you know, have some continuity there also.
So I mean, it's not like so from what I've been able to gather, I mean you work on the keys in practice a lot, you know, but it's still something that you have to mentally think about as you approach the course, you know. I mean, it's not like into your subconscious or anything like that, where you just turn and it's there. Because you've practiced it enough times to where it could potentially be there.
Well, the whole point of practice is building in muscle memory, and that's, you know, muscle memory is what you know is what gets us there in water skiing. But at the same time, as you'll see, like, I think golf's a good example. You know, like when you've got the pressure on and you've got to make it count, it's got to happen. Then you can't recreate that scenario in practice where it's like as much pressure as you put on yourself, you can't replicate the nerves, the cameras, the people watching, the oh my god, what if I don't do well, etc. So, you know, actually, to like I say, to have those keys, it takes your mind off of it, but also, like, you know, it stops you doing weird stuff, which, you know, when you've got this extra adrenaline, you don't want to pull, you know. Anyone that's pumped full of adrenaline will, you know, the veins are going a little bit more. You're a little bit, let's say, stronger. You might get a bit more aggressive. You've got to actually dampen that down and make sure that you're not doing too much. So yeah, the keys are there to kind of just as a sort of almost to go, yeah, okay, well, I want to do technically well, but also like let's not do the things that I might do if I was just kind of let loose in this weird everything dialed up to 11 situation.
Mm-hmm. Does it vary between pass to pass? You know, I mean, obviously, whenever you get ready for something like 13 meters or even in some extreme cases 12 meters, you know, does the approach into each pass vary in that regard, or is it all more or less the same thing, just ramped up intensity behind the boat type deal?
Yeah, well, you're trying to, I mean, you know, the reason that we do so many passes before our hard parts, which is off intensity five, you know, the reason that you're doing these passes is to dial in and kind of, you know, get the feeling with the boat, with the water, what sort of thing. And I mean, yeah, like for sure, when I go out on 13 at Travers or at Swiss, I'm not particularly worried about missing it, but I am worried about, you know, running the best first pass I've ever run in my whole life. So I can feel that I get the sink early, if you like. Of course, when you go out at Moomba, or the Masters, where it's shockingly bad to ski generally. It's very, very tricky with the rollers. You know, you are nervous about missing the pass. Well, hey, Morocco, best example possible. I mean, we went out to ski in Morocco this year, and it was absolutely diabolical. All that current, it was a complete unknown. So you're worried about missing every single boy. You don't know. So yeah, I mean, like, you're still in every situation, you're trying to be completely dialed in. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you're really nervous about missing the pass.
Indeed, indeed. Now. A lot of skiers that I've interviewed have participated in other sports as well, in practice and what have you, you know, just to keep everything going forward and keeping the physicality going. Now, you touched upon golf. You know, I haven't seen you pick up a golf club in Yonks if ever, but you.
I haven't, Tony, but I watch you on TV sometimes, and I just see how.
But you can appreciate
how mental the sport is.
Yeah, you can appreciate that. You can probably appreciate darts as well, which I know it's kind of like a random thing, but I mean, you've gone to Ali Pali, Alexandra Palace, you know, in the off season, and seen those folks. I mean, it's not exactly the most physical of sports. I mean, far from it. But I mean, you've got to appreciate the kind of mental acuity of those guys trying to work out, you know, the doubles in their heads. They're like looking for a 9-dart finish, you know, whatever you need, that kind of stuff, you know. So what kind of sports, like darts or golf or even tennis? I know you play a little bit of tennis. You know, I mean, you thrash Vincent on a regular basis, from what I heard. But let's talk about what other sports and activities you do and how that contributes to your package out there on the water.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, Tony, you mentioned it, because actually, like, one of the big frustrations I've had in the last few months, honestly, is that, like, I'm with the amount of skiing that I'm doing and how many tournaments we have, like, we can't actually do all the things that we want to do. Like, I think maybe people might have this idea that the skiers are all so crazy active the whole time. And I think in the off season we are, or, you know, outside of tournaments. But actually, I think that, you know, for myself at least, I can't do as much as I want to do. Like, if I had my way, I would play pickleball every day, you know, and tennis, and I'd be in the gym more and all that sort of stuff. But you can't do that and train and ski, because you're just wearing yourself out. So you get to tournaments and you're just knackered. And I know that I've been guilty of it. I mean, especially this year was an interesting one for me, because I did a lot more, obviously a lot of gym through my rehab last year. And so I came into the start of this year, and I was in the gym like I had been for the last 3 months of last year. I was in the gym every day, or more or less. And then I added skiing on. So I was doing my kind of typical skiing regimen with all the gym. And I didn't realize until I got back from Moomba how absolutely, utterly exhausted I was. Because then I kind of, you know, I had a 10-day break after Moomba and then came back, and suddenly I was like three times as strong when I was skiing, because I wasn't exhausted. So actually, I was getting pretty wound up at the end of the season here, the last 2 or 3 weeks, because I wanted to go and play pickleball every evening. Because there's a place just up the road, and I really enjoy it, and it's a nice, you know, I'm very bad at it, so it's a nice thing to be able to improve at, whereas water skiing, it's very difficult to improve at. But I couldn't, because I was going to be, you know, physically drained for the next day's skiing. So that's like, that was kind of an interesting one for me this year, was the frustration of actually, okay, the season's got to end, because I want to be able to live my life, you know, not just have a beer on the weekend, but also go and, you know, not feel worried about kind of being physically exhausted for my training sets. But yeah, I mean, you asked me what I like to do. I mean, I like pickleball, tennis. I play tennis at a very, very low level. I play with Vince, and tend to just get the better of him. He tells me that I'm a far worse tennis player than him, but a better winner, which I'm not sure how to take that, but I mean, I'm happy to be beating him most of the time. and then Lou Alcamo, who's the guy I ski with in Palm Bay, one of the guys I ski with in Palm Bay. He's 71 years old. He's been taking tennis lessons for 15 years, and he tends to beat me, but that's a good time. Always nice to be beaten by a 71-year-old. He's a tough old bloke. And then, yeah, I'll play squash with a friend of mine back home in England when I'm there. And then, yeah, a bunch of gym stuff. But, you know, I like racket sports. They're sort of the they're what kind of gets me excited about sport when I'm not water skiing.
So what do you draw most out of doing those activities? Is it competitive sharpness or just keeping up physical shape?
I just enjoy it. I mean, it's just fun to do something that's completely different. And I mean, like I say, I can go to this pickleball place and I'm useless. And there's these, 60-year-old dudes that are much, much better than me, but I can run around a bit faster than them. And I mean, I'll say that because I picked up racket sports again maybe 2 or 3 years ago. A friend of mine in England who I play squash with, who's been a friend of mine for ages, he's like, come on. I'm like, no, it's gonna be bad for my knees. And I ended up playing with him and fell in love with it. But what I found, which is quite interesting, was that I'm actually very fast. I can get around the court pretty good. So that kind of, in some ways that gave me a bit of I feel athletic, it's fun to be able to run around and people not thinking you're going to get the ball back, and then you do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But I mean, I think it all helps. I mean, I'm not sure it's necessarily like the best thing for my skiing, but it's fun, which is good. That, enjoyment is always good. The happier you are in your life, the better you water ski. I've always known that. And I think also, there's probably some hand-eye coordination in there, some athleticism. You're burning a few calories, you're getting stronger, in certain areas. So yeah, I mean, I really enjoy it. And that's like since the season finished and before my teeth started going mental and I had to have them pulled out, I played pickleball and tennis every day.
Wow. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your off season, because it's kind of varied over the last few seasons. I mean, there was one season, and alluded to this, where you went back to England, you hung out with your mates, and you went over to the World Darts Championship, in the new year over at Alexander Palace. A year before, or what was it? The year after, not too sure. But you went to India to take in the cricket, I think it was like the World Cricket Championship or that kind of stuff, or the IPL or that kind of stuff. But this time around, a little different, because you're still in Florida right now. Other years you'll be back in Blighty by now.
Yeah, I mean. Just the last few years have been interesting. I mean, so I haven't had an off season since 2021, because in 2022, by an off season, I mean like sort of, training during the winter months or whatever, after the tournaments are finished. I mean, in 2022, I was struggling with a shoulder situation all year and made it through to the end. And that, I remember I said on the dock, once more into the breach, and that was my last set of the year. So then after that, I took 2.5 months off while I was having all these, surgeons and stuff look at my shoulder, see what's going on. It actually ended up being a nerve issue, which I've managed to manage from then on, which is good. But I didn't ski that winter at all. Again, got to kind of, end of January when I came back and had to start again. And that was, tough, but normal, but fine. And then into 2023, and then into 2024, I won the World Championships at the end of 2023, and that was my last set until, that was October 15th. I didn't ski again until the 15th of January, so I took 3 months off. And again, just starting again, trying to get back to a level, that was by choice. And then obviously last year, broke my leg, didn't ski again until the 10th of January this year, and then that was really starting again. So I think that this year, I'm really, like, and also, couple of those years in 2022, I was just not motivated to ski anymore. I was burnt out. Same in 2023. It was so much pressure I put myself that year. It was a tough year off the water, and
needed a release valve, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody I ski against put so much pressure on their skiing for the whole year that sometimes you just don't want to do it that much at the end of the year, because you're kind of like, I've done my volume for the year. This year, though, also I didn't ski as much as I wanted to last year, of course. This year, I'm very excited to ski through the winter. And my plan is, unfortunately, I haven't been able to ski for a few days because obviously, so I had to have teeth pulled down, all sort of thing. But hoping to get back on the water in the next few days. But I'm here until the 23rd of October, and then I have a record tournament down here in Palm Bay. I don't do record tournaments ever, but it's here, and that'll be fun. So I'll try and get a solid score, and then back to England on the 24th. I'll go to Greece and do a bit of skiing there, I think, before, like a week later. Then actually I'm going to Australia to watch the Ashes cricket. Mid-November, and I'll go ski with Sarah Green and Ryan Green down there.
This is in the middle of their summer, so.
Yeah, I mean, and how exciting is that? I mean, what a trip. Go with mum and dad. Dad's a huge, huge cricket fan, actually bigger than me. And mm-hmm. so we're going to go and watch England probably get destroyed by the Australians first in Perth and then in Brisbane. So I'll be able to ski down there. So that's kind of really exciting. And I've got a lot of technical things I know I can work on. I've really got, I think, a good pathway, which I'm going to put to the test to actually improve for next year. And what's fun about it is that it's not just the fact that I'm going to ski, I have a block of skiing till the end of October and then November through into December that's going to help me. It's the fact that I'm not going to be starting again in January, that I should start from a good level in January. So I'm getting kind of a double benefit, actually that will be not just let's get back to sort of being able to run some bars, but actually I'll have some balance to be able to work on things in January too. Because I can tell you when you're starting from zero, which I certainly did this year, you're not working on things. You're just trying to kind of understand how your body works and if you can do it again.
Just get back into the flow of things now. Now, you mentioned your dad, Martin Winter, who is a pretty decent slalomer in his own right. But from what
I mean, that's very generous of you, Tony. He'll be very happy to hear that. I think that he's had some derision
and
towards his slalom
well.
Technique over the year. Yeah, well, I think mum's probably a little bit more celebrated than dad. Dad is a good skier, but he's poor him. Mum's probably got a couple more titles than him. Even though dad was the one that we're very grateful that he introduced us all to it.
Yeah, I mean, well, what I was about to say a little bit, so far as Martin is concerned, he sounds more of a traditionalist so far as sports are concerned, as we hear in the background, Louisiana Lafayette getting ready to train for the Nationals here at Bennett's Ski School. But anyway, that's an aside. Martin sounds like a traditionalist because, I mean, he's prepared to travel to follow the England cricket team, and with the full 5-day test match and that kind of stuff. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember I didn't get into cricket until I was probably 15 when England were competitive in the Ashes in 2005. But I remember that summer, just really understanding it and talking to dad about it, who I sort of watched some cricket with him growing up. But yeah, no, he absolutely loves it. And I can't tell you how excited I am to go and watch cricket, and I'll be sitting next to dad having a beer, and he's 71 years old and he's not been to Australia to watch cricket before, so we're going to both go and going abroad to support our boys. How cool is that? I think that's just going to be the most amazing experience.
The Barmy Army,
the Barmy Army and test cricket being by far is the superior version of, well, I was going to say cricket, but actually in a lot of ways sport. I mean, there is nothing like the drama of a 5-day test match, the swings and the back and forth. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, the latest series with India this summer was just insane against England. So, I mean, yeah, if hopefully it's not just as it usually is in Australia, England getting absolutely destroyed. But the drama will be amazing, and I'm so excited.
Now, you say that, though. I mean, you definitely appreciate the tradition that is part of the 5-day game. And for those of you that are wondering about cricket at this point, just bear with me a little bit, because I mean, there's the traditional 5-day game, then there's the ODIs, the 1-day internationals, and then you've got 2020, and those last two are more recent innovations to the game. Now, in the sport of tournament water skiing, it's been kind of ruled by tradition for years and years, and yet you're part of the movement that's trying to further expose the sport, to bring in younger, more eager and engaged spectators. So how does that reconcile a little bit?
I think, the test cricket, I mean, it survived for so long because the product's so good. I mean, it's fantastic. If you get it, if you're sort of smart enough to kind of take the time to realize what test cricket is, you're going to fall in love with it. If I'm not going to watch a test cricket match between you know, Pakistan and Zimbabwe. I'm not going to do that. But when you when you've got an in, when you know, when you've got a team to support like I do England, I mean, it's just, it's unthinkably good. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to water skiing, I mean, yeah, like there is a, I always say, like, there's actually a lot of crossover. People, you know, might laugh at me, and they often do, like, oh, what, you're going to go watch a match for 5 days and then someone might not win? I'm like, well, yeah, but, you know, you watch water skiing for 2 full days. You know, there's all the qualifying, and there's the fun. You know, like, people will sit and watch TWC for a cumulative, 17 hours over 2 days frequently. And that's kind of the same thing in some ways, you know. So it's just a little bit longer, but
I know, but there's always a winner, though.
Yeah, but you know, I promise, as you know, Tony, but anyone listening to this, I promise you that some of the biggest results I've ever seen in sport, and the most glorious results, was when the team batted out a match to save the draw instead of lose. I'm thinking of like Monty Panesar, you know, against, I don't know, South Africa in, you know, 2011 or something. Like, it's glorious. Graham Onions, I remember, like, doing an amazing defense, like to get to the end of the match without losing the last wicket, when you got your two most terrible batsmen in there. It's there's nothing better.
Last wicket stand.
Exactly. And but yeah, I mean, like, you know, water skiing, it's you know, our broadcasts are very, very good. They're also very long, so there's a lot of crossover.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're gonna tie up a little bit this podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you once again. You're definitely by far my most frequent guest on the TWBC podcast. I don't know why that is, but you know it.
Who are you, Tony?
But it's all good. So I mean, you're getting ready to head out of the United States. I mean, you're probably slowly packing your bags right now to head on back to Blighty and then on to Australia. Now, as you do all of that and start to ponder upon the season, I mean, obviously at that point you're trying to set up some initial goals, you know, and maybe I almost forgot. I mean, I said I was going to circle back to this Travis Grand Prix, you winning the Pro Tour title. I mean, the Pro Tour's been in existence for what, like, you're going into its fourth year,
five years now.
Okay, and this is the first of those Pro Tour titles that you've won, and I mean, that must have been that must have been a whole mess of emotion in that instance when you realized that you just couldn't be beaten by the time the Travis Grand Prix was concluding.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that you know, Freddy Krueger is a guy I like to talk to about water skiing, and I was talking to him about the tour a few years ago when he was kind of, you know, he had to do a certain thing to win, and he goes, Freddy, I'm going to stop you there. I'm just going to focus on winning, and if I win, then I'm going to be okay. And so I sort of knew I knew I was somewhere in the lead of the tour, you know, after my result in Morocco and San Gervasio. But I just didn't look at it, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to focus on what I can actually do. And I knew that there was two more tournaments that year that where I could pick up points, and one was Mastercraft Pro, one was Travers. And so I just, you know, went to try and win both of those. And obviously Mastercraft didn't go so well. I tied for fourth, and I was again very disappointed. Very average skiing, same score in the final that I got at the World Championships, 3:10.25, which I oh my god, I mean, I can't stand that score. But but then, yeah, like with the Travis tournament, I just was like, okay, go get a good result, and then the tour will come. And I did. So, yeah, I mean, and I think I came third in the first 3 years. Sorry, I came second in the first 3 years of it to different skiers, Nate, then Will, then Nate. And, you know, I was kind of like, oh, it really would be a shame if I finished my career without having won one of these, having won, you know, basically everything else. And then I obviously broke my leg last year. I'm going, man, it's going to be really tricky. So, yeah, no, to come back and do it, very, very, very happy. And I think, and also like to finish the year, a difficult year where I started from, you know, 100 meters behind the start line, to finish the year last competitive round of the year and run 10.25, that really tied it up for me. Like I ran 10.25, I ran it well, and I kind of felt like, yeah, that's a really good way to finish the year. Won the tournament and you know, my fourth one of the year. It was in a lot of ways a dream come true. I mean, I'll always look back at this year with a lot of disappointment about how the World Championships went, because that's just so important to me. But if I was to take that out of it, if it wasn't a world year, for example, then I could say that this was just a phenomenal season for me. I've been, you know, really very, very happy with it. I am very happy with it otherwise. I mean, just the world is, it's a big downer. But then, again, I look at that and I go, well, someone like Nate, who's a four-time world champion, he's missed the podium three times in the last few years. I didn't ski well, but you know, the best skiers do it, so that's okay.
But you've laid the groundwork for future seasons now that you've gotten over the injury, you've gotten the Pro Tour title, you know. So what are your kind of prospective goals going forward after you get done with the Test cricket, you know, and get set up for the next season? I mean, obviously you want to try and win every tournament that you go to, but I mean, you know that probably more than most that is easier said than done. But what are your kind of specific goals going forwards in a non-world year?
Well, it is a world year, because the International Federation, in their infinite wisdom, has put the tournament in January, less than 18 months after the previous one. I think in February, I think so. We do have, I mean, you've got to think about it as two world years back to back. And then we're going to have two non-world years, just because the season's going to go on forever. We're going to have to pull next year's season into the following year, because you can't, I think the last one next year will be sometime in October or November. And then 2 months later, we're going to be back at the World Championships on the other side of the world. So, I'd appreciate it if they hadn't done that and we had another year off, from a world, but there we go. I mean, look, at the same time, it's in my favor. I mean, I'll be motivated from this year. So, it's going to be good. My first thing is to have the most productive off season I've ever had. I really think that technically I can improve. You look at Charlie Ross has come along and done so well this year, and been inspired by how, just the way that he's able to do a good job into 135 to set him up to turn better than his onside a lot of the time. I watched him come into boy five at 10-25 at the Travers Grand Prix in the second round there with his butt back and his handle out and still turn five, and I'm like, wow, well, I just can't do that. so if I can get somewhere towards that, I know I've got as good of an onside in the world as probably anyone. If I can improve the offside a little bit, a bit more aggression, a bit more safety, in some situations where I wouldn't have done this year, then I'm going to be in good shape. So I'm going to come back fitter than I ever have been. I'm working hard at that already. Normally in the off season, I'm a bit, I've put on a bit of weight. I'm going to enjoy myself while also standing on the scales every morning. Like I say, there's a balance, because, what I don't want to do with the next year's season is going to be a year long. It's going to be 13 months long by the time the world comes around. I need to be careful of not getting burnt out. But I think that one of the things that I do know that, when I come back in January, often I've got to lose a lot of weight and I've got to put a lot of muscle back on. I've got to get good at skiing again. And that's quite debilitating mentally, because you've got to do it to the exclusion of everything else. So you just don't really have much fun. So yeah. I think my aim is to come back in January and already be fit, already be strong, already be skiing at a good enough level to where I actually can, have a bit of a, life outside of skiing, for those months before Moomba. You always say you want to win everything and you never know where the wins are going to come. I mean, I didn't think I was going to win the Masters this year and I did. I'm going to work really hard. I'm going to try and improve myself and then we'll see. And I mean, I do, you're right though, Tony, I think everyone's going to have to kind of figure out how we manage next year, because the load of tournaments is high. It goes long in the season. Then we got to take a break and then we got to get down to Australia and stay fit through the winter, which is going to be tough. So, is it a case of taking time away from missing tournaments? Is it a case of, do you have a mini off season after the last tournament before coming back? That's something I'm going to have to get my head around. But like I say, the first thing to do is to stay really fit and to get better at war skiing.
Indeed, indeed, and I will. And I'll put a cap on that by saying I'll try to be better at announcing events and what have you over the course of the next few seasons, what have you. I mean,
it's impossible, Tony.
It's possible. It's possible. You know, you always try and seek that higher bar. You know, I mean, I'm looking forward to doing that. Now, before we wrap up this podcast, normally I ask people to like thank and acknowledge people that have helped them, and I'll do that at the final question. But something that I've thought about a little bit so far as a question is basically, is there anything that I should have asked or could have asked you, but haven't?
No, I don't think so. You covered all the bases, I would say.
Okay, that was a fairly quick and succinct answer. Yeah, I mean that basically takes care of that. So, last question. Well, not a question. Just asking you. You know, who do you thank and going forward? You know, and that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, I think at the end of a season in which I've had good success in a place where I necessarily wouldn't have done, I'll say a huge thank you to Tom Williams, the British team
at
physio who did Activate Rehab in just outside London in Chertsey, because he was a guy that was phenomenal with me last year. He kept me motivated. I know him to be a very honest person and not someone who's going to blow smoke up my ass, and he was honest with me but also happy with my progress as I was getting back, and that gave me the confidence. I remember I talked to him on my last day in England last year. I said to him, okay, Tom, you're telling me I can go skiing. When's the first time I can try 10.75? And he goes, well, yeah, probably next week. And I'm like, well, holy shit, I'm not going to try it next week. I mean, but he was like, no, you're in good shape. So yeah, huge thank you to him. And I mean, all the people that helped me through my rehab and through my recovery last year. And actually, I'll tell you what, I'll say this too. Thank you to my sponsors, who it wasn't, when you're 34 years old and in two pieces in a hospital bed as a sponsored athlete and without any sort of guarantee that I would ever come back. I did have a bit of a concern that they would sort of be in touch and be like, oh, Freddie, what about this contract or whatever? And then
they're not like Ferrari, you remember that film, don't you? What was it? The one with Daniel Brühl and Chris Hemsworth, like Ferrari, already searching for another driver whilst their existing one was on their way to hospital type deal.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that called? I forget what that's called.
Rush.
But anyway, Rush. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't have any of that. And actually from one of my sponsors who I'm very, very grateful for, like after the MasterCraft Pro, I got a message just saying, hey, you didn't ski so well, but we're very happy to have you and you'll be back. And that meant a hell of a lot to me. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, not to sound too corporate, but that's nice. I mean, you want to be part of companies that you feel that you're a part of the family, and that, it's good to feel supported.
Okay, just mention them again, Matt. MasterCraft, D3.
MasterCraft and D3, yeah. They're the ones that look after me and allow me to do what I do. So,
and of course, good Activate. Equipment.
Yeah, well, Tom Activate was unbelievable last year. Like I say, yeah, I couldn't have asked for a better person in my corner.
All right, then, and that concludes this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name's Tony Lightford. You've just been hearing Freddie Winter, and another podcast will be coming up fairly soon. But in the meantime, it is going to be ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.